Hi, I'm Bill Arnold. Thanks for listening to the podcast. Welcome to Afternoons with Bill Arnold. I am the Bill Arnold part of that sentence. Awfully glad you joined me today. It is Thursday, and as you know, you will spend 1/7 of your life on Thursdays. So let's make it a great one. We have a great show. Dr. Kent Kaiser came into the studio. He has been up to his earballs in meetings because school is getting started, and he's got a big smile on his face, so I don't even know what that means. But
earballs.
Usually I don't invite you in quite yet, Kent, but that's all right. You jump in whenever you like. You know what I mean? Trying to spit out a monologue and then you just jump in, but that's fine. Okay. Kent, I want you to actually read live scripture for me. You got something out of Hebrews 13.
Yeah, Hebrews 13:2. Always remember to entertain strangers, for by doing so some have entertained angels unawares.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, that's my favorite Bible verse.
I have one queued up out of Psalm 94. This is verses 18 and 19. It says, "When I said, my foot is slipping, your unfailing love, Lord, supported me. When anxiety was great within me, your consolation brought me joy." What a great verse. A couple of great verses, Kent.
Absolutely.
We're two for two right now. All right, we're gonna talk about a number of things when we come back. So stay tuned. It's 5 minutes after the hour. We'll be back in just a minute.
Have you ever heard the right message at the right moment? Well, recently Abby wrote us to say this. "I've struggled with depression, and I just wanted to let you know how you've been a huge encouragement to me. With your help, I'm learning how to give myself over to God and to let Him rule in my life. Thank you so much for your encouragement." The truth is, Abby's story would not be possible without friends like you praying and supporting this ministry. Hi, I'm Dick Whitworth, station manager for Faith Radio. Our fall share is coming September 11th, and we need your help. If you're not already a monthly contributor to this ministry, would you consider joining us? For just $30 a month, you can become a member of Team 360 and a member of the Hope Coffee Club. We'll tell you more as it gets closer, but thank you for praying even now about your involvement in fall share. You can start your pledge today by visiting myfaithradio.com. It's simple and safe. Thank you, and God bless you.
Nice of you to be joining me today. It is 7 minutes after the hour. Dr. Kent Kaiser, who's chair of the communications at the University of Northwestern, has come into the studio. I always enjoy talking to Kent. And Kent, when I was looking at some of the headlines, I saw that the Target CEO, Brian Cornell, said, "This is the best consumer environment I've seen in my career."
Well, yeah, the economy's going along pretty well because we've had some stimuli, including tax cuts and regulation cuts, and you know, the job market is pretty hot right now. I have more people sending me job openings for students than I can even believe. I mean, I don't have as many students as we need to fill them all, actually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But when you hear someone like the head of Target saying, "We have never had more foot traffic ever. We've never seen," and Walmart saying the same thing, Kohl's the same thing. TJ Maxx, everybody's saying there's a lot of people buying stuff.
Right. Now, interestingly, though, sometimes more foot traffic at certain stores is a sign of a poor economy.
Really?
Yeah. When the economy is bad, there's more foot traffic at Kmart, Walmart, and McDonald's,
okay,
for example. Yep.
Mm-hmm. And what's your theory on this, Kent?
Well, at those times, people are trying to economize.
Oh, they're just trying to save money.
Now, I think that right now the economy is pretty hot, so I think probably every retailer, even if we ask the upscale retailers, they're probably having more foot traffic, too.
Mm-hmm. Do you shop only at flea markets?
I shop everything I'm wearing today came from Unique Thrift Store. I only shop at thrift stores.
Really?
Yeah.
But you're a college professor.
I know. We make so little money. Like, I can't remember the last time I went to an actual department store. It's years ago.
Yeah. Well, I know there's occasionally we get pushback from listeners, and it's friendly fire. It's just them saying, let's try to keep in balance, although when we report on things that are positive in the country and things that the Trump administration has done and some of the issues out there, let's make sure that we're adding the balance of a Christian perspective on a president who seems to lack character and has a lot of bad habits.
Right. Well, it's interesting because, I mean, many of us struggle with this. I mean, when Trump was first elected or even when he was running, many of us really didn't like his style. I can't say that I did. And in fact, I mean, I'll say I voted for him, of course, but, you know, kind of holding my nose in a way because you knew the guy was a bore. You know, he was
he's a man
poorly
of impeccable
mannered.
Flaws.
Yeah, poorly mannered and obviously had been divorced a couple of times. I mean, we knew he, you know, was a womanizer and all kinds of other different things. But, I mean, when you compared him to the alternative, he was the better one, of course. Now, personally, I've been pleasantly surprised once he's been in there, and I think that this is the case with many people across the country. We still look at him and say, man, he is really a jerk, and he says a lot of dumb things, and I don't like his style and all this. But, you know, and you listen to him speak, his speeches are a stream of consciousness. Like if you try to write it down and try to figure out what he was saying, it's mm-hmm. it's just a mess. He does have an interesting style of speech, and a lot of people have analyzed it, but it's really difficult actually to pay much attention to it. And, you know, if you're actually listening to the words, it's unsettling actually to hear what he's actually saying and to unscramble what he's saying and things. But I think most people who voted for him the last time are probably sitting there thinking, well, I'll vote for him again. And the main reason is that he gets things done. So it's about results. And, you know, if you're a conservative and you're looking at what's happened since he's been in office, he's appointing very conservative justices to the courts all the way up to the Supreme Court. The economy is humming along, like you just said. We're stronger around the world. We seem to be more respected globally. And a lot of people appreciate how he seems to be concerned with everyday workers. And so oftentimes the people you hear are the most upset with him are kind of the elites in this country, but everyday people like the results. And so mm-hmm. even though they don't like his style and question even where he is as a Christian and other things, you know, when you look at the results, we've never had a more pro-life president. I mean, that's the biggest shock to me, and that's mm-hmm. a big issue for me. I wouldn't, if you had asked me on Election Day in 2016, do you think you're voting pro-life? I would have said yes, but I had no idea I was voting for the most pro-life president that we've ever had.
Mm-hmm.
But I did.
Yeah.
And I'm happy about that. And I would vote to re-elect him because that's my issue. You know, and I don't like his style. I don't. But, you know, if given the choice of voting for a boor who is extremely, extremely pro-life versus somebody who's not pro-life, I'm going to go with him.
Mm-hmm. You know? But Kent, what about his lack of character and his...
It's troubling, and there is no question it's troubling. But again, you know, we're electing this person hopefully for policy purposes. And I would have said the same thing, you know, even in past elections too. I hated it when people told me they were voting for Obama because he was black. Well, that's not a reason.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's not a policy reason. Or people just say, oh, I'm voting for Hillary because she's a woman. Well, again, it's not a policy reason. There might be policies behind it, but that's just not a reason. I mean, I'm not voting for Trump because he's a jerk. I'm voting for him because of the policies, you know. So
it's not
I'm not going to vote for a jerk, but I'm going to vote for the policies I agree with.
It's the platform, not the personality.
Totally.
Yeah. So if you're listening, you want to jump in to the conversation with Kent and myself, 877-933-2484. We'd love to hear from some listeners that have expressed that we're not giving enough attention to this. And I think that, you know, like you say, Kent, the president is on some issues doing a great job, and he's a deeply flawed man.
As everyone is, and this is the thing, too. I mean, it troubles me to hear people, you know, rail on the president. I mean, you know, he is flawed, but so are all the rest of us. I mean, you know, And to me, okay, he's in office now, and I mean, it's like the time to have complained about all that kind of stuff is well in the past, like during the primaries or even during the general election. If you didn't want to have a jerk in office, that was the time to complain about it. It's not, now.
Do you think the office of President of the United States just attracts the wrong kind of people?
Well, there's all kinds of reasons why, you know, certain people are attracted to politics. You have to have a certain ego in the first place. I mean, there's one exception, I would say, and that was George W. Bush. He was the most reluctant person ever to have run for the presidency, from what I understand. He didn't want to do it, and he was kind of pushed into it. But most of the time, people who run for president have to have a certain ego.
It has to be really big.
And not only that, but it's beyond politics. I mean, you think about what these people have done in their lives. You know, you think about, you know, their dealings in business, their dealings even on an interpersonal perspective. You know, a lot of presidents going back in history, we now know, were not exactly the most moral people. I mean, you can go back and look at, you know, the presidencies of like Kennedy and Johnson and others and see, you know, Kennedy was known to have more than one girlfriend at the same time as he was married. And, you know, you look at that and we now know from tapes that we hear from President Nixon that he did not speak very kindly of different kinds of people. We know that after the fact. Now, you know, we see Trump out on the internet, and so it's right out there and it's more obvious. But I don't think that this man is any more flawed than many of the people who have been elected in the past.
All right. Well, I think we're going to jump to a break. If you want to get in and have a comment or a question, 877-933-2484 is the number, 877-933-2484. Dr. Ken Kaiser is my guest in studio, and we're having a lively conversation. If you want to jump in, we'd love to hear from you. It's 15 minutes after the hour. We'll take a very short break and be right back. I'm feeling better now. There we go. There's Kent's walk-up music, the bagpipes. Awfully nice to have Kent Kaiser in studio. We've got a caller. Cynthia is calling in from Buffalo, Minnesota. Hello, Cynthia.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my call.
You're so welcome.
I just wanted to say that, you know, we all knew that Mr. Trump was sort of a rogue and a maverick when he went in. But I got to tell you, of all the presidents, well, at least the last president, he's been more protective of Christians and done more for them than anybody else has. So God bless him for that.
I agree. It is. I wouldn't have expected that either when we voted for him. I wouldn't have expected him to be so strong for Christians. But thankfully, he surrounds himself with the right people. Many of our friends, my friends, personal friends, are advisors in the White House. And so when it comes to the issues that are important to evangelicals, he's got the right people in policy positions and the right people speaking to him. And so you're right. He's absolutely been the most protective president of Christians in really recent memory, even more so than George W. Bush, who was an avowed evangelical. I mean, we don't hear that Trump is that big of a Christian or anything, but he's nevertheless protecting our rights. That's for sure.
Yeah. Cynthia, great.
I think if we want him to succeed, we need to pray for him. And God can use the dog next door if he wants to. He puts people in office, maybe they're not Christians, but they're strategic. And I can't help but think that he's supposed to be there, at least for this time. And he's very protective of Israel, and we need that for him, for our country.
Yeah, I agree. And, I mean, it goes right back. This is biblical. I mean, you go back to the Bible, and God put the people in place to be in power who weren't necessarily believers. You think particularly of Cyrus the Great, who protected the people of Israel at a time when they were truly in peril. And Trump is, I'm not going to say he's Cyrus the Great, but he is certainly protecting Christians' rights across this country since he's gotten into office.
Thank you.
Cynthia, thank you so much for calling. It was awfully nice to hear from you. And there is a lot of attack on religious freedom in this country. I think there has been strong opposition from the White House. Do you agree, Kent?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So that's I think all believers should feel that there's someone with watching their back.
That's right. And it's in little policies that we don't even see, you know, or aren't really made very public. You know, during the previous administration, a lot of Christian institutions were really under assault, including Christian colleges and universities like here at Northwestern. And you can think of like Christian-based hospitals and others who the previous administration was really forcing them to do things they didn't want to do, taking away, infringing on their rights, really. And this president has turned back a lot of those very negative policies. So we can be thankful for that.
Mm-hmm. Ken, how political are you on a scale of 1 to 10?
10.
All right, I'm like a negative 1.
I used to be about a 15, but...
Yeah, that's not even chartable, Kent.
Pulled back a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. But you think about this all the time.
Right.
Yeah.
It's a bigger picture kind of a thing, you know. And when you think about the direction of the country, you know, this is a thing too. It goes beyond this one man. It goes beyond just this president. It goes beyond this administration. When you think about, you know, the overall trajectory of our country and the values and so on, you know, we were on a bad course with the previous administration. And I wouldn't say that about. There were other Democratic administrations who were actually very good. Bill Clinton, Jimmy Carter, you know, in terms of Christians' rights and so on, were good. But that last administration really was problematic.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it's really, undermined a lot of traditional American values. And you saw the trajectory of our country going in a bad way. And hopefully this administration is getting us back on the right trajectory.
Kent, what do you think about Masterpiece Cake, Jack Phillips, under attack again?
Unbelievable. It's almost as though he's the only cake maker in that state. You know, obviously, this is a big PR ploy for the left.
And now, just for the listeners, tell them what happened.
Yeah, he's the cake maker who he will serve gay customers, but when a couple wanted him to put a gay marriage message on a cake, he refused. Because that would infringe on his free speech rights and religious rights, too. But really, it was a free speech issue that you can't be forced to promulgate a message with which you disagree. And he won that case in the Supreme Court, as people might recall. And now here he is. You know, you think, okay, phew, he got done. He got done with that case. We won. Well, now he's under assault again. So mm-hmm. That's what's going on.
Yeah. So when we returned from Labor Day weekend, I think that Tuesday, the Supreme Court or the Senate starts their confirmation process of Brett Kavanaugh.
That's right.
What do you think that's going to be like? Is that going to be a circus or is it going to be quiet?
There'll be a little bit of a circus for a short time, I think. I think he's going to get through because my understanding is he's met with the Republicans who might have been questionable and they seem to be for him. And so... You only need a majority, and the Republicans have that as long as all the Republicans stick together, which it sounds like they will. And I suspect that they're going to pull in a couple of Democrats to vote for him too. So he'll be on the Supreme Court shortly.
Mm-hmm. And what do you think of the Cohen and Manafort trials? Are you following that at all? And are you
interested? A little bit? The Manafort one is interesting, and it really has nothing to do with the president. But once you've got a special counsel in place, they can go down every rabbit trail possible,
right.
And they did with this guy, and they actually did find some wrongdoing in terms of some of his offshore accounts and accounts, and that he was in Russia and other places where there was actually some wrongdoing. And so, I mean, I guess we should be glad that they found that, but it really had nothing to do with the president. Unfortunately, the guy worked for the president for a short time on his campaign. So some people want to try and make it sound like the president somehow implicated in that, but he doesn't seem to be at all. And then the other one was his attorney, Cohen, who, I don't know, this, you know, I don't see anything particularly tied to the president. I mean, the guy says, you know, he gave his testimony and named somebody who was running for federal office. And when you put the, you know, connect the dots, he was clearly talking about the president and stuff. But it doesn't, again, seem as though the president was actually involved in any wrongdoing. But, I mean, I guess we'll see if they find anything else because the guy says he's got tapes and or recorded things. And, well, I mean, I guess we'll find out. But so far it doesn't seem like there's much there. But, of course, the liberal media will make a big deal out of it because both of these people were – at some points associated with the president.
Mm-hmm. Kent, we got a call from a listener asking about the liberals' opinions. She says, I'm a liberal and a woman, and your comments about Trump and voting are concerning. Let's talk about both sides and not lean so conservatively.
Hmm. Well, I mean, you know, I think we kind of have the debate when it comes to an election, like who should be elected, and Trump was. So, and I don't think that anybody out there can, like before this election, I don't think anybody could have sat out there and said, oh, Trump is this extreme conservative or something. He was a Democrat just a couple of years ago, and he's given a lot of money to Democratic candidates over the years and things. So that what's surprising to me is how partisan the liberals have made it because of that fact that, and maybe they're sore over it. Maybe they're sore over the fact that he did leave the Democratic Party and became a Republican. I know we had a similar situation in Minnesota when we had a candidate for governor in U.S. Senate. That was Norm Coleman, who switched parties. Boy, the Democrats, I think, probably hated him more than they hated lifelong Republicans because of the, you know, they considered him a turncoat. And I think there might be a little bit of that going on with Trump.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you think about like the policies, many of his views aren't extremely conservative in a lot of cases. And so that's what's interesting. This whole business of things like tariffs. I mean, that's a thing that the old union bosses and I can remember members of Congress like Richard Gephardt and others when they ran for president. That's what they were all about, was tariffs and protecting American workers. And that's not a Republican thing at all. And, you know, there's other policies like that where I'm a little bit surprised that the Democrats are so, you know, vile against them, you know, and right. I mean, you offered them up on immigration. You offered them up to something more liberal than Obama ever even offered, and they rejected it just because it was Trump and just in order to be partisan. It seems to me like if Trump had run as a Democrat, then they all would have been on board with those kinds of policies. Mm-hmm. So that's what's troubling to me, is that people are partisan for no reason and don't really look at the policies. Like, I can say outright, I'd hate the idea of tariffs. I don't like these, yeah, you know, this whole business. But you don't see, you know, you should be seeing liberals saying that they're for that because they were for it like 10, 20 years ago. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what's troubling to me, is like people don't come clean and say why they're for a candidate or opposed to their or a person in office, you know, based on the policies. Again, it comes down to like a lot of people are just partisan. So it's all about the party. And they're not looking at the individual policies, because surely there are things that liberals should be agreeing with here in the Trump administration, because these are definitely not Republican ideas.
Yeah.
So that's what's troubling
to me.
Can't we
have a minute left, but how do we find unity? My highest calling is to love my neighbor and not to argue with anybody. I'm so apolitical that I can't stand it. So I want to engage people on a Christ-focused way, not a political divide of any kind. I mean, I hope my listeners don't know where I lie.
Yeah, I really don't know where that's. I don't know how we get back to a point where everybody can go. I mean, you read in history books, or I do, like about when Eisenhower ran. Well, he was a big, you know, national hero, and some people are surprised when he ran as a Republican and that. But I don't know if we'll ever have somebody comes along like that who's such a sort of nonpartisan hero or whatever,
right,
but that's probably what we need.
It's an interesting discussion and a difficult debate. I know it stirs up emotions, so thank you for helping me sort through this a little bit today, Kent. We'll continue this discussion at another time, but Dr. Kent Kaiser, always a pleasure to have you in studio. It's 10 minutes until, it's 28 minutes after the hour. We're going to take a little break. When we come back, Arlene Pelican is going to be with us. Look forward to speaking to her. We'll be back in a minute.
Every woman knows this feeling of being fried, being exhausted and stressed.
Sometimes life can get hectic, but in spite of the hustle and bustle, Jesus promises us peace and rest. Hi, I'm Steve Douglas for Making Your Life Count. And Shanti Feltan brings us to the heart of the matter.
I was so struck when I was looking at that scripture in Matthew where Jesus says, "Come to me, all you who are weary and burdened. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me," right? "For I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls." It's while you're working, while you're busy, while you've got this stuff going on, but make sure it's my yoke, right? Learn from me and you will find rest for your souls.
The best gift we can give ourselves each day is to spend a few minutes resting in His presence and in His Word.
We are back. It is 32 minutes after the hour, and I think I'm I enjoyed the last conversation I had with Ken Kaiser, but I'm kind of done on that topic. And Rebecca, you threw in a couple of interesting points, and let's just put a nice little bow on that discussion.
Sure. Well, and it's so difficult when you discuss politics because, believe it or not, not everyone in the body of Christ thinks the way I do or the way you do.
That's true.
He calls us from every country, every background, and, you know, we can debate a lot of issues. I think that can even be helpful in our country to have this very healthy, lively debate about how best to enact what we believe and to make sure righteousness is active in this country. But I think One really helpful point that you and Kent brought up was to divide issues versus personality. Because if we're debating issues, it can be really tempting to then say, well, I don't like that idea, so I don't like you.
Right.
Because you have that idea.
Right.
And that's, I think, where we cross the line. Because no matter what, God calls us to love. Whether you see that person as your ally, your neighbor, because you agree with them, we're supposed to love our neighbors.
That's
but we're
true.
Also supposed to love our enemies. So if you see them as, you know, standing for everything you don't stand for, guess what? Loving them is still job number one.
This is how confused I can be. If you agree to disagree, have you agreed or disagreed?
That depends. What did I have for breakfast that
day? I don't know.
I
don't know. Pizza, probably.
I disagree with that.
Okay, good. There we go. All right, let's move on to something way more uplifting, okay? And that would be Arlene Pelican. She's an author and speaker and blogger. She's written 6 books, including 31 Days to Becoming a Happy Wife, 31 Days to a Happy Husband. It goes on. Her new book is called Calm, Cool, and Connected, 5 Digital Habits for a More Balanced Life. I'm already interested. Hello, Arlene.
Great to talk with you. You know, I have 7 books. I've written one while you were sleeping.
Oh, good. I'm so pleased.
Well, I'm still thinking about the agree and disagree.
Oh, good. Yeah.
I think I agree. But yeah, that's kind of
like
how we can be like this with the digital world. Do we agree or disagree? I'm really not sure.
Yeah, it is this topic. You've said the cell phone is a digital pacifier. That is so right on.
Yes. So we talk about the digital pacifier, the binky, you know, when you have a little kid and they've got to have the little pacifier. It's like, where's the pacifier?
Uh-huh.
Oh, God, help us. We don't have the pacifier. And then you look, whether it's a 10-year-old teenager, 40-year-old man, even a 60-year-old person, and they're thinking, oh, my goodness, where's my phone? So much it's become this extension of ourselves, a needed accessory. And, yes, it's a helpful tool, but does it have to be always cradled, you know, close to you at all times? And that's the question.
Mm-hmm. I spoke last Saturday, and I entered the green room, and there were, I think, 4 other people in it. And there was about 45 minutes before I went on, and there were other speakers in the room, and they were all looking at their phones. And for, I think, roughly 30 minutes, nobody said a word to me because everyone was busy looking at their phone. And I was not holding my phone. I was just sitting there waiting to have actual conversation with a real person. Yeah. And, you know, I'm not being critical. I'm really not, because speakers are busy. They're connecting. They're doing their stuff. They're on their break. So they're not obligated to talk to me, for sure. But I'm just saying, another one of those situations where there wasn't that human interaction, which is kind of what we all crave at some level.
And that's such a good point, because the common courtesy, you know, if just someone enters a room and you look up, you acknowledge the person's presence, even if that doesn't begin this, you know, 5-minute conversation. But it used to be that that was something very common. But now, you know, you can walk into a room, sit right next to someone, nobody's moving, you know, nobody's looking up or moving. And the problem can be that we're not necessarily doing what's so important on our phone. We might just be like looking at shoes or just scrolling through, you know, junk mail. Like, you don't know what tends to be that we can be wasting a lot of time, even though it looks like we're doing something very important.
Yeah, you know, Arlene, that we talk with pictures now, because we all have phones and we all have albums, and you always have to see the pictures from the party, and here's the birthday celebration, and did you see this? So we're always using phones as our props in conversation with people. So they are an advantage on a lot of levels, and technology is really, really good, but it's so harmful. Yeah. And I'd like you to talk about the harmful effects of the digital pacifier.
Yeah. I think if you look, you know, so this is not going to be an interview about, okay, everyone, now you're listening to me. Now you need to drop off your phone at the first intervention center. You know, so I'm not going to tell you to do that.
Right.
It's okay. But I do want to ask your listeners, you know, how is your technology impacting your relationships? Because at the end of the day, at the end of your life, you're not like, oh, I wish I played that game more. You know, you're thinking,
Right. Wow,
I wish I would have spent more time with this person, or I wish I wouldn't have been so busy while my kids were growing up, or whatever it is. And so the question is, how is your technology on a day-to-day basis? Is it bringing your family, the people in your life that you care about, is it bringing them closer to you, or is it kind of isolating you? Because what tends to happen is, yes, of course, you can use technology to Skype grandma and to do, yes, you can do that. But what tends to happen is, okay, we're all together in the same house or in the same room or whatever, and everyone's on their own devices, and we're not really talking or laughing or having activities together anymore because that's been replaced by everyone just being there with their phones. So I think if you're a parent, it's a huge issue. Because if your child is an average child spending, you know, 7 to 10 hours on screens every day, then how much time in the day is that child having for physical activity, you know, reading, to read their Bible? Like, it's awfully hard to go, oh, I'm going to crack open Deuteronomy now when they've been playing Fortnite for 5 hours.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how can that compete? So I think as a parent, the how your child is maturing, that's hugely influenced by technology, and that's a big warning sign. And then so many kids, you know, out of a survey of 6,000 kids, over half said, my mom or dad is on the phone way too much. And so thinking, when your kids are looking at you, are we always on our phones? I touch my phone a whole lot more than I used to. You know, you're checking, did I get a text? Let me make sure I'm caught up on my emails. Let me look at this. So that relationally, there can be a very big price to overuse of technology. And I think that's the main concern.
You know, Arlene, I heard some person on the radio make an analogy of how they used to be prior to smartphones. And he said, I used to be like a scuba diver. I would get a book and go deep. And he said, now he said, I live life like I'm on a jet ski. I just skim across the water because I spend very little time. I go from swipe to swipe to, you know, website to website. And I find that I'm not doing the kind of deep studying, reading I used to.
It's a very well said point. And it is totally true that when you're reading a book, you're just reading. But when you're online, you're like, okay, this article is 3 pages. When is it going to be over? You know,
it's
like your
attention
span is totally different. You're looking at the edges of the advertisements and you're ready to jump out. It's just a different way that your brain is processing the information.
Mm-hmm.
And so it is really good to have time where you're actually reading so that you're not so distracted and you can have more time to think.
Yeah. Arlene, in your book, and let me remind listeners, it's called Calm, Cool, and Connected, 5 Digital Habits for a More Balanced Life. You came up with an acronym called HABIT. And I'd be curious to know if you would tell our listeners what each letter stands for.
Absolutely.
And how we might be able to use and implement each one in our lives.
Yeah, because it really is habits, how you use your phone, how you use your tablet. So habit, the H is hold down the off button. And that's the idea that you're not addicted to it. Like, you actually can hold down the off button, whether that's having it charged out of your bedroom overnight, having screen-free meal time, having like a no Wi-Fi day and make sure, can I survive that? You know, that can you go camping for 2 days and not have your phone and not, you know, break out in hives? So hold down the off button. Make sure that's something you can do. The A in habit is always put people first. So it's that idea that if someone walks into the room, a human being, you will pivot away from your phone, from your computer, and acknowledge, like, hey, like, look at them. And it's the idea that your computer, your phone, your tablet, all those things can wait. They do not have feelings. But the people in your life that are waiting for you, like, so don't be at lunch and have someone stare at you across the lunch table while you're texting. Like, go ahead and text later and go ahead and be with the person that you are there physically with. Always put people first. The B in habit is brush daily. Live with a clean conscience. And it's the idea that just like you brush your teeth, you've got to brush your mind, your heart, because the internet can be a very unsavory place. Obviously, it could be online shopping. It could be pornography. It could be snarky comments on Facebook. I mean, there's so many ways you could kind of sin on the internet. So the idea is, okay, let's brush daily and live with a clean conscience. You know, if my grandmother read every post that I posted, would I be okay with that? You
mm-hmm.
know? And then the I in habit is I will go online with purpose. That whole idea of, you know, you've been on the computer for 3 hours and you're like, what did I start You know, why did I come? You know, so it's the idea of having maybe a list of things that you are there to accomplish, and you can't just surf the web until your list is done. You know, be more purposeful. Don't waste so much time online. And then the T in habit is take a hike. And that's the idea of getting outside, that, you know, the more we're just indoors all the time, it's not healthy for us. So, you know, we got a dog this year and we didn't think that we would ever do that. And part of that reason was, like, my husband was like, you kids, you got to start walking around more. You got to start in the sunshine. So it's this idea of, you know, if you can take a 5-minute walk outside and then go back to the office, do that, because nature, as God created it, is so restorative. And that's why we go to beautiful national parks for our holidays, you know. But now, today, when kids and families vacation, a lot of times you'll see them, they're inside on Wi-Fi, and it's like, no, you're
right.
On vacation. Like, go outside and enjoy nature. So take a hike. So those are the 5 different habits you can start implementing.
Yeah, that's awesome, Arlene. And it's always a good reminder that God and Grandma are watching.
They are.
They're always eyes upon you.
That'll keep you in line.
Yeah, yeah. So let's talk about the pivot. What is the pivot again? Maybe you would expand on that.
Yes. The pivot is this idea. You know, when I was writing this book, Growing Up Social, Raising Relational Kids in a Screen-Driven World, and my kids were like, oh, that's really funny, Mom. You're writing this book about screen time, and you're like staring at the computer all the time, right? Because I wasn't writing it on longhand or anything. And so I came up with this pivot that whenever I heard their footsteps coming towards my computer, instead of them having to interrupt me, right, Mom, and what, and I'm not even looking at them, as I heard them, I would already pivot away from my computer, swivel in my chair, look at them as they came towards me, and I was like, hey, Lucy, what's going on? What can I do for you? And she'd just say, you know, like, oh, I need to know where this is, and I'd give the answer, and then boom, that was that interaction. And I realized that was so much better than her coming up to my chair and me just continuing to type and her being like, Mom, you know.
Yeah.
So this whole idea of when someone comes to you, I mean, just think of how many times, especially with family members or best friends, people we live with, you know, we're looking at our screens all the time. So when someone actually comes in, you know, a work friend, whatever, like, pivot away from your computer, away from your device, look the person in the eye. You know, if you're in the middle of something, say, hey, let me finish up this text and then let me get to you and go ahead and finish your text and then really look at the person. And it's just that retraining of the common courtesy of eye contact and body language that is positive. Like, I'd like to talk to you, instead of, you know, on the Wall Street Journal today, on the front page, they have this little thing about everybody wearing earbuds. And when they're wearing them, you know, like, okay, don't talk to me because I've got my little ear things in. And it's the signal, right? And it's just, our society is becoming more like that. Like, don't talk to me. And we need to be like, of course, there are times, leave a person alone, of course. But with your family members, with your friends, like, you need to be talking to each other. So you need to be practicing the pivot, get away from your devices and actually have a face-to-face, eye-to-eye conversation with someone.
Arlene, the pivot's a good little habit. People could start working on that effective tonight.
Absolutely. It's super easy. It takes you 3 extra seconds and your family and friends will thank you.
Yeah. And after 21 days of doing it, it's just a way of life and you've got a new habit. All thanks to Arlene Pelican, who's my guest. She's written a book called Calm, Cool, and Connected, 5 Digital Habits for a More Balanced Life. We'll take a short break and be back with more of Arlene in just a minute. It is 12 minutes until the top of the hour. Arlene Pelican is my guest. She has written a book, I think this is her 8th book. It's called Calm, Cool, and Connected, 5 Digital Habits for a More Balanced Life. As we're talking about the phone, the smartphone being a digital pacifier. And I know we're super dependent on our phones, but Arlene, how can we come to grips with addiction to technology? Because if you have a friend and he has 14 beers every night, you pretty much can look at him and say, okay, you're an alcoholic. Mm-hmm. But there are people doing the equivalent with their smart devices.
Yeah.
And we can't look at them we can't look at them and say, well, you're addicted to technology, because that could be offensive.
Exactly. And you know what's so interesting? Let's say you are addicted to alcohol. You come to that realization and you get away from alcohol. But you come to the realization you're addicted to technology. That's a problem, because it's not like all of a sudden, okay, you don't have to email, or you don't have to text,
yeah,
or you don't have to hold the phone anymore. So this is a big issue. So it's much more subtle. You know, we would never give a child, oh, here's a cigarette or here's some alcohol, but we'll give them an iPad, you know, at age two with no problem. And so this is a big thing. And the idea is, okay, does my technological life get in the way of my normal routines? Like, am I missing stuff because I'm on my phone? Am I, you know, not getting enough sleep because I'm on my phone or because I'm watching Netflix too late? You know, so there are definitely questions you can ask yourself, you know, and there's a quiz in the book, you know, are you calm? Are you not so calm? Are you frazzled? Like, where are you on that continuum? And you can also open it up to your friends and family members of, you know, if you have the attitude, you know, to learn,
mm-hmm,
you could ask them, do you think I'm addicted to my phone? I dare you, right, to ask,
yeah,
you. Because if you're thinking, there's no way I would ask my spouse or my best friend or my children that question, right, then you know there's a problem. Because otherwise you would be able to ask that question and they'd be like, oh, no, you're fine. You're not addicted to your phone. So, you know, when it starts getting in the way and people are like, you didn't show up. Oh, I was playing this video game. I kind of got lost in it. I'm sorry. Or you understand. It gets in the way of your normal routine. And you're also, let's say, not producing as much at work because you're wasting a lot of time online. Mm-hmm. Or maybe you're full of worry and anxiety because you're just comparing stuff on Instagram and you feel so inadequate. And so many times just unplugging will really help you out.
Well, Arlene, what about the scenario where, you know, that rare occasion where the internet goes down at work and your boss says, you can go home now, and you go, yay. But then you go home and your internet's down at home, and then you're just as mad as can be.
Yeah, right. Yeah, and then you think, like, why would you not enjoy that? Like, aren't there other things in life that are enjoyable that have nothing to do, you know, with Wi-Fi or a computer? And so that's the thing. It's like we've got to find other hobbies and interests as people so we're not so wired. Because can you imagine in 20, 50, 70 years when everything is just connected? And then if something went wrong, like, would we be able, it's like, oh, my goodness, like, I can't open the doors of my house. I can't do anything because the internet is down, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so I think there has to be this kind of rebellious nature in us. Like, I will not be so dependent on technology. Like, I can do things apart from technology and enjoy myself.
Yeah. I think in high school, I have about four pictures from high school. And two of the pictures, I think I'm pretty good looking in them. But nowadays, kids have hundreds and hundreds and maybe thousands of pictures. I mean, in 2013, selfie was the word of the year.
Yeah.
And so what
go
has
ahead.
Social media done for our society?
Yeah. And this is huge because this, when we had the camera, you know, usually there were like other people in the picture, like you were the one taking the picture with your camera of other people.
Yes.
You're like chronicling the people that were important to you in your
anymore.
Life and the memories you wanted. Not anymore. I was at the Freedom Tower in New York City. You know, it's like the 102nd story. It's amazing. It's an amazing view. And I watched these two teenagers for 20 minutes just take perfect selfies of all different angles of just the two of them in a corner for 20 minutes, and they did not even look out the window. They were just doing all these poses, you know, with their phone. And so it is this idea like, oh, my goodness, we have oversaturated this. So, you know, yes, it's fine to take a selfie, but you do not need to take a selfie every day, every hour, every location. You do not need to do this. And instead of chronicling yourself and trying to put your best foot forward, why don't we as a society notice other people, take pictures of them, and just be more outward? So what selfie has done, you know, that wasn't even a word 10 years ago,
mm-hmm,
is it's made us even more self-absorbed than we naturally come. You know, we already come very
right.
self-absorbed. And now our technology just reinforces that, hey, it's all about you.
Yeah.
It's all about how you feel. It's all about how you look. And that is not good for a society.
Well, you know, I think of technology addictions, and Arlene, I think they're awfully close to a food addiction because you can't mm-hmm. withdraw totally. Like you said, you still have emails
yeah.
you have to do, and it's probably your only phone for many people. It's the only phone they have. So they don't set it down or they don't have it out of their sight for very long.
So I think as adults, for us to realize, like, you know what, I like this thing a little bit too much, or I am wasting too much time on it, or this thing is enslaving me. instead of, you know, the technology is supposed to save you time and make you more efficient and give you more time to, you know, have those moments with the ones you love. But so many of us are like, wait a minute, we don't relax anymore. All we do is spend time on this technology. So first, it's that realization, like, I am overusing this.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's putting habits in place to put limits. And then think of, as adults, if we have these kinds of struggles with it, if you hand technology to a 3-year-old, to a 6-year-old, you know, what kind of struggles will they have in their 20s and 30s? And that's astronomical. So
yeah.
You start seeing these internet addiction centers that are starting to pop up. And I think it's very important as parents that we realize, you know what, this is not going to create a great future for my child.
Yeah. So, Arlene, let's be super positive now. How can Christians redeem our time with technology? How do we use it for good?
And isn't it beautiful that you can just put away the technology for a few minutes and talk to God instead? So, for instance, take back the red light. I will tell you, I look at my phone at the red light. And then I thought, what am I doing this for? Like, why do I need to look at this?
Mm-hmm.
So I have taken back the red light, said, okay, do not touch your phone at the red light, and just like say thank you to God for something. You know, let it be a moment of gratitude.
You're the person I honk
or
at.
A moment to praise God. Yeah, exactly. But I keep my eyes on the road. Don't
okay,
worry.
Good.
But you know what I'm saying? So shows you, you know, all of us are so susceptible to this. And so have that the habit of I will go online with purpose. So I will use my technology for good. I will on social media. I will only post things that are uplifting. You know, I can disagree. And disagreeing is not hateful. It's just expressing your opinion. But I will do that in a courteous way. You know, I will make sure that I'm not wasting time. I will make sure that, you know, all those positive things of – you know, there are so many good things you can do. Like my husband sponsors a child through an organization called Child Hope in Latin America. And just today I was thinking, I've got to show my kids this website because they have an example of like what a girl would kind of go through and how this program could change her life. So I mean, that's really cool that they can see someone in El Salvador that's similar to a girl that we're sponsoring. That'd be really cool. So there's so many neat things that you can do, but to be honest, if you stop an adult or you stop a teenager, say, hey, what are you doing right now? They're not doing that. You know, we're not like trying to stop world hunger or learn a Bible verse or something like that on our devices. So it is about being more purposeful on our devices and really using them for good.
Yeah. So, Arlene, I'd like you to just speak to anyone listening who says, okay, I think I got called out on this. I'm addicted to my technology.
Yeah. Like, and you have stepped on all 10 of my toes.
It might even include the host. So maybe you would just be real gentle and give us some encouragement.
Yeah. You know what? It's how lovely that you are listening right now, because this is your opportunity to say, you know what? I don't really like how I've been using it now that I'm thinking about it. I'd like to do something different. And even if it's just one new thing, like a screen-free mealtime that you spend, you could do it today. And that you say, you know, I'm going to make some positive changes so I can get a better hold of this technology. And it's not too late. And guess what? When you do this and you feel lighter and more joyful and all those, it'll ripple out to the people in your life. So it could be a really, really good thing.
Arlene, it's really nice to talk to you again. I appreciate you coming on the show. You live on the West Coast, don't you?
I'm in San Diego.
Yeah, so... it's probably a little bit more of a civilized time for you in the afternoons. I was used to try to talk to you in the morning.
And, that's right.
And you used to get up. God bless you. You used to get up at 4:30, 5 o'clock to talk to me in the morning. So
anything for My Faith Radio.
There you go.
Small price to pay.
Yeah, thank you so much. My guest has been Arlene Pelikane, and her book is called Calm, Cool, and Connected, 5 Digital Habits for a More Balanced Life. Have a great rest of the evening, Arlene, and I'll look forward to another conversation with you.
Thank you so much, Bill.
You bet. All right, it's a couple minutes until the top of the hour. Craig Groeschel is going to be with us in the first half of the next hour, and then Carolyn Custis James is going to be with us as well. She's going to talk about the Book of Ruth. It's going to be a great hour coming up next. Stay tuned. Be back in a minute. Thanks for listening. Programming like this is made available through your support. Information available at myfaithradio.com.